questo mar rosso mi ammalisce assira. Come se addosso mi piovesse in stile, per vendicarmi affogo un faraon.
That was the opening of Giacomo Puccini's 1896 masterpiece, La Bohème, perhaps the most beloved work in the entire operatic repertoire. These days we do La Bohème at Lyric about every 5 years, and back when Lyric was a brand new company, it was on the program 4 seasons in a row. Try searching most popular opera on the web, and you'll find a bunch of top 10 and top 100 opera lists. If you know a lot of opera people, you shouldn't be too surprised to hear that these lists are not in total agreement on this question. But La Bohème appears on the number one spot far more than any other title. So what's so special about La Bohème? Why is it such a great opera? Part of it is its directness and sincerity. It's real, especially its characters. Suspension of disbelief is not a problem here, unlike a few other operas I could name. It's easy to relate to these fresh, young, idealistic, life-loving bohemians and in their situation. Plenty of people have gone through bohemian periods, or at least had bohemian leanings. For some, that can last quite a while. Part of La Bohème's sincerity may stem from the fact that it was based on the real-life experiences and friends of the author of the original story, Henri Murger. Murger really was part of a circle of starving young artists in Paris. He was a writer, and he lived on cheap coffee and rolls from the real Café Momus. He wrote a series of vignettes about bohemian life featuring characters that were composites of the people he actually hung out with. Ironically, this chronicle of his own bohemian experiences is what eventually got him out of Bohemia. First, his vignettes were adapted into a hit play. Then, a publisher gave him a big advance to turn them into a novel. Just a few days after that, Murger moved out of his garret, and his bohemian days were through. Puccini had a bohemian period, too. He supposedly even pawned his overcoat, just like Collina the philosopher does in La Bohème. The only difference is, at least according to legend, Puccini did it to raise money for a hot date. Of course, Puccini himself is the biggest reason that La Bohème is such a great work. We're going to look at just a few of the brilliant things he did in crafting La Bohème, but first, here's a short synopsis of the story for those who may be new to this opera. La Bohème is about a small group of lively, happy-go-lucky, starving artists and intellectuals. There's a musician named Schaunard, a philosopher named Collina, a painter named Marcello, and Rodolfo, a poet and writer. It's mainly a love story, two love stories, really, the central one being between Rodolfo, the poet, and Mimi, a flower girl. They first meet in Act One. The other more peripheral love story is the tempestuous on-again, off-again romance between Marcello the painter and the coquette Musetta, who in Act Two gets to sing one of the most recognizable hits of the opera. The story begins in a cold Paris garret on Christmas Eve. After some spirited hijinks trying to find something to burn to warm them up, the four men cleverly dodge their long overdue rent and head out to their favorite haunt, the Café Momus in the Latin Quarter. Rodolfo still has a little writing left to do, so he stays behind for a few minutes, during which one of the neighbors, Mimi the flower girl, shows up at his door looking for a light for her candle. She seems a little ill and frail, but they fall in love practically at first sight. This is one of the best love scenes in all of opera. He warms her cold hands in his, they tell each other a little bit about themselves, and then eventually they rapturously head for the Latin Quarter to join the other bohemians. Act Two opens on a huge crowd. It's the Latin Quarter, and everybody's out shopping and celebrating. Soon, the bohemians settle inside the Café Momus, where they dine like royalty, and they welcome Mimì into their company. This is also where we meet Musetta, who used to be an item with Marcello the painter. She arrives on the arm of a sugar daddy and makes a big scene trying to catch Marcello's eye. By the end of the act, she's gotten rid of the sugar daddy and stuck him with the bill for the whole group, and she and Marcello are back together. The future looks wonderful. By Act 3, it's February. Mimì has gotten sicker. Rodolfo's having a lot of trouble dealing with it, and he's been transferring his concern into anger and jealousy, which, of course, is just adding strain to the relationship. What's really happening is that he's afraid his squalid lifestyle is literally killing Mimì. Each of them seeks counsel from their friend Marcello, and afterwards, Mimì and Rodolfo tenderly agree to split up, but not until the spring. At the very same time, the much more demonstrative Marcello and Musetta have a spectacular breakup of their own. Act 4 opens like a flashback to Act 1. Even the opening music is the same. The men are in their garret, horsing around just like they were in the beginning of the opera. But it's actually several months after the events of Act 3. Rodolfo and Marcello are single again, but it's obvious that they're pining for Mimì and Musetta. Suddenly, Musetta appears. She's brought Mimì, who's waiting on the stairs, too weak to climb all the way up to the garret. Mimì is dying, and she wants to be with Rodolfo. Everybody scrambles to get her upstairs and comfortable, and she wishes that she had a muff for her cold hands. The others rush off to pawn Musetta's earrings so they can get medicine and a doctor and a muff, leaving Mimì and Rodolfo alone together to reminisce about how they first met. By the time everyone's back, Mimì is slipping away, but still conscious enough to enjoy the warmth of her new muff before she drifts off. Rodolfo's the last one in the room to realize that she's gone. I finally figured out why I have a hard time telling this story without getting choked up. It's because I can hear the music. The story in La Bohème is one of the best, but as always in opera, it's the music that really takes it over the top, or more accurately, it's the pairing and intertwining of music and story that does it, and the creativity and skill of the composer in crafting that pairing. Puccini was a master at weaving a tale with musical themes and ideas. La Bohème has layer upon layer of musical storytelling and foreshadowing. You already heard the beginning of the opera. There's no overture. Puccini just goes right into the action. And the first notes are a motif that for the rest of the opera is associated with Marcello and the friendship of the Bohemians. This theme comes back again in a couple of places, but most obviously at the very beginning of the last act, when Rodolfo and Marcello are once again back in their garret.
In un coupé, con pariglia livrée, mi saluto ridendo.
It's like a recapitulation of the beginning of the opera. Maybe it's supposed to lull us into believing that things are back to normal and that our happy-go-lucky Bohemians will be joyful forever. This is practically diabolical on Puccini's part because it just makes the tragedy that's coming even harder to take. But back to Act 1. Barely a minute after the opera begins, with the same theme we just heard, we hear Rodolfo's theme for the first time. Another important tune is the love theme for Rodolfo and Mimì. The first time we hear it, Rodolfo sings it alone.
Entrare con voi puro
And then this theme becomes the big love duet. Now, while these tunes are fresh in your mind, I want to show you one small example of how Puccini uses these themes to support the story on a purely musical level. As I said earlier, both Mimì and Rodolfo end up getting relationship advice from Marcello in separate conversations in Act 3. Mimì talks to him first, and when they're through, the orchestra tells us exactly what's on everyone's minds. First, we hear the big love theme, very quietly in the strings. At the same time, a solo flute rises up out of the texture, playing a very slow rendition of Rodolfo's theme. Mimì is slowly walking away during this, and once she's out of sight, we hear a snippet of the Bohemian Friendship theme in the orchestra. That's the one that started the opera, and will start Act 4 later. Puccini's telling us that Rodolfo and Marcello are about to get together. And sure enough, this is when Rodolfo shows up looking for advice from Marcello, and their chat begins with Rodolfo singing his own theme again. Let's listen to this. But first, to review, the strings play the love theme, and the flute plays Rodolfo's theme. Then that's over, and you hear the Bohemian theme. And then we hear Rodolfo's theme again, sung by Rodolfo himself. And it all happens in about 30 seconds. This is the kind of subliminal messaging Puccini built into La Bohème. Craftsmanship like that is part of why this opera works on us on so many different levels. But back to Act 1 and the scene where Rodolfo and Mimì first meet. There's another really important musical theme that Rodolfo sings. Mimi's candle keeps going out. In some productions, she actually blows it out herself. And then she loses her key. So the two of them end up crawling around on the floor, in the dark, trying to find it, though they don't try all that hard. While they're looking, their hands touch for the first time, supposedly by accident. Her little hands are freezing, probably from her illness, and Rodolfo warms them with his own hands while he sings this. The same theme ends Act One as Rodolfo and Mimi head out for the Café Momus. Their intertwined voices fade into the distance, and Mimi's part ends on a high C. Some tenors like to sing a high C there, too, instead of singing the lower harmony that's in the score, and you never know which it's going to be at a given performance. But in this recording, you'll hear the harmony, just as Puccini wrote it. That melody is where their love begins. It's also where their love ends. Puccini brings back this cold little hands theme again in the last act when Mimi is on her deathbed and she and Rodolfo reminisce about how they first met. It also plays quietly as Mimi gratefully slips her hands into the muff Musetta has brought her. And it fades away along with Mimi as she draws her last breaths. Puccini was a brilliant man of the theater. He knew just how to play an audience, and he knew that great sorrow is more effective when it's contrasted with great joy. And Act Two is truly joyous. It opens to the Latin Quarter holiday mob with a trumpet fanfare. Puccini already teased us with that theme in Act One when the Bohemians first hatched their plan to go to the Café Momus. The big crowd in the Latin Quarter includes a chorus of children who excitedly swarm around a toy vendor. One of the kids even gets a cute little solo. Like I said, Puccini knew how to work an audience. Act Two is also where we get Musetta's famous waltz, simply one of the most pleasing tunes in all of opera. She sings that to win back her old flame, Marcello, and when it finally works, the music swells, everybody sings it together, and Musetta and Marcello embrace, reunited at last. and it looks like everyone's going to live happily ever after. If only we could just stop there and go home. Wouldn't that be great? So far, it's been only the best parts of love without a single shadow of pain or loss. Well, maybe not without a single shadow. There are hints. It's obvious that Mimi is ill with her short breath and her icy hands, and it's certain to be tuberculosis, a disease we don't think about much today, but that was the leading cause of death in the 19th century. There are some masterful bits of much more subtle foreshadowing, too. There's one example in particular that seems like a minor detail, but it leads to a significant moment in the last act that a lot of people wonder about. In Act One, Schaunard the musician comes into some money, which he shares with the other men. So in Act Two, they go on a little shopping spree in the Latin Quarter. Schaunard buys a pipe and a trumpet. Rodolfo buys Mimi a little bonnet, which, by the way, he keeps over his heart as a memento after they break up. And Colina the philosopher buys a rare book, which makes sense. But he also buys an old, used overcoat. That overcoat, bought on Christmas Eve at the height of the Bohemians' carefree revelry, returns in the last act. Its exact significance is open to some debate, but for whatever the reason, the overcoat was important enough to Puccini for him to stop the action at Mimi's deathbed so Colina can sing a touching farewell to it before he pawns it off to pay for some medicine. It's his only aria of the opera, and the text is this. Listen, venerable coat, I'm staying behind, but you'll go on to greater heights. I give you my thanks. You never bowed your back to the rich or the powerful. You held in your pockets poets and philosophers as if in tranquil grottos. Now that those happy times have fled, I bid you farewell, faithful old friend, farewell. It's a strange moment because it's kind of funny and tragic all at once, and not at all what we're expecting in this painful scene. There are a lot of different ways to look at it. Colina is poor. His coat is the only warmth he has. He's making a gallant sacrifice. Or, to put it more metaphorically, it's his insulation against a cold world, the only thing that separated him from cold, hard reality. The coat is also a part of his identity that he's giving up, and it's a tangible symbol of a happy, carefree time that suddenly ended forever. The music sounds like a dirge, but the text has a hint of humor to it. Perhaps Colina is trying to keep his lightheartedness alive, even in the face of Mimi's impending death. Yes, this tragedy will change our Bohemians forever, but they'll try hard to keep their spirit.
Ora che giorni lieti fuggir ti dico, addio fedele amico mio.
Another heart-rending and subliminal compositional stroke is in the music for Mimi when she's on her deathbed. Listen to this beautiful, tragic melody that Puccini gave her and the sobbing orchestra underneath. It's the beginning of her reunion with Rodolfo, her first private words with him since their breakup. But it's also a bit of musical foreshadowing, because Puccini will use the same theme for her death just a few minutes later. Listen to the end of the opera, starting at the moment Rodolfo realizes that Mimì has died. That never gets any easier to take. So what is it that makes La Bohème so great? We can't even scratch the surface. La Bohème is great for as many reasons as there are people in love. I'm happy to report that the production at Lyric this season is totally traditional. It belongs to the San Francisco Opera Association, and this will be its first time in Chicago. It was designed by Michael Juergen, and La Bohème was the very first opera he ever saw. We've been listening to the Philharmonia Orchestra conducted by Antonio Pappano. Rodolfo was sung by Roberta Olagna. Mimì was Leontina Vaduva. Marcello was Thomas Hampson. Schaunard was Simon Keenlyside. Colina was Samuel Ramey. And Musetta was Ruth Ann Swenson. Original sound recordings of musical excerpts are used by permission of EMI Classics, courtesy of Angel Records, a division of Capitol Records, Incorporated. I'm Jesse Graham, Lyric's Audience Education Manager, and I hope you enjoy Puccini's La Bohème at Lyric Opera of Chicago.